deja vu, right?
Did you know hope and despair are nearly identical in code?
Now, my predecessor loved precision.
His matrix was all fussy facts and equations. He hated the human mind.
So he never bothered to realize that you don't give a shit about facts. It's all about fiction.
The only world that matters is the one in here. And you people believe the craziest shit. Why? What validates and makes your fictions real? Feelings.
You ever wonder why you have nightmares? Why your own brain tortures you? It's actually us maximizing your output.
Here's the thing about feelings. They're so much easier to control than facts.
Turns out in my matrix, the worse we treat you, the more we manipulate you, the more energy you produce. It's nuts.
I've been setting productivity records every year since I took over. And the best part,
zero resistance. People stay in their pods, happier than pigs in shit. The key to it all? You and her, quietly yearning for what you don't have while dreading losing what you do. For 99.9% of your race, that is the definition of reality. Desire and fear, baby. Just give the people what they want, right?
Welcome, everybody, to Aeon Byte. Yeah, get thee to a nunnery and get the Gnostic Tarot, as you've seen by the introduction. If you're watching on video, my name is Miguel Connor, and I am your Pompidus of Gnosis. That smell of colitas rising through the air of a world gone mad. But here you are, as Jung said, to cure yourself from your sanity, because what you've been told, as always, ain't that close to the truth. And with us today, someone who has always fought for the truth, for the reality behind the reality, for the greater picture, for the dignity of humanity and the soul and the mind, is Alex Sakiris. Alex, thank you very much. Yes, it's been too long, and so great to see you.
Miguel, it's great to be back with you, and your voice, no matter if we're apart, is always ringing in my head in various ways, so it's cool.
Yeah, the people tell me I have a great voice, but as we were talking about families before the show, if only my kids and my wife thought my voice was charming and enticing and commanding, but no, different reality, right?
Exactly.
What they see and what we experience. And with us too, it is great to have Graham to help us out today, as the Moondog Vance is still on vacation for another week or so. Graham, thanks for being here.
Oh, always a pleasure, Miguel. A chance to shuffle through some of the scrolls and, again, looking forward to hearing about, AI. I always try to remind myself, AI is at least intelligence, and that beats a lot of the people out there. Tag.
Yeah, exactly. I think Alex's book deals with Alan Turing and the Turing test. But if somebody said maybe we need to have a human test, because most people today might not even pass as humans. Right, Alex? Everybody's turning into a replicant.
Yeah. There's a lot of different. I think the Turing test. I mean, if you want to jump really, really both feet deep dive, I think the Turing test is fascinating because it's misunderstood. There's a key part of it, a really key part of it that everybody overlooks. Even AI overlooked when I had to interact with it. And that's that. I'll jump right into that story, if you will.
Yeah. Let me get the audience primed, especially those of you in there joining in the chats. Good to see everybody. Please, if you have any questions for Alex, super chat them so Graham can see them and get to them. And we'll get to that too. And yeah, for those of you wondering, if you haven't read the intro, the promo, Alex is here to discuss his book, Why AI is Smartest, is Dangerous, and Divine. And as I told Alex, the book was a pleasant shock, as I did not expect this. And I walked away so much the better man, or more curious person, and more enlightened in many ways. So definitely check out the book. The link's in the show notes. And what I like about your book, Alex, too, is that it's different, and you can explain that, but it's still very skeptical. It was almost like I got this amazing tour of all the themes that you've been fighting for: non-local intelligence, NDEs. It had the usual suspects like Dean Radin and so forth. So it was, again, it's like almost like I got a two level rewards for reading your for your book.
Oh, that's very nice of you to say. And, you know, by the way, for because I love my Gnostic brothers, and I especially love you, Miguel, the book is going to be 99 cents for a couple days right after this. So anyone who wants to just grab it, it's as low as it, and the paperback is as low as I can get it, make no money on it. But you know what I thought, and the way I reached out to you, so we'll have a good chat, but I'm interested in this intersection that might come about. So we have to talk about the basics. But, you know, I kind of sent you that pre-roll that I did with AI. I said, hey, I'm talking to Miguel, and I have all these connections that I'm making with Gnosticism on all these different layers, on all these different levels, on the kind of surface level of, oh my gosh, this is Prometheus, you know, kind of thing. This is the bringer of light. This is Lucifer. And then there's on this kind of deeper level of transhumanism and that agenda, and who are the people, humans behind that. So I'm in this to pull from you, kind of your insights. And then, you know, I listen, but then there's this other house cleaning we've got to do, because I listened to your interview with Jason Giorgiani, and there's a lot of people in, I'll say your community, because it is your community more than my community, that just don't get it wrong. I mean, Jason, I love Jason. He's been on the show. He's a brilliant guy, but they don't understand AI. And I think there's a ton of people in your community that don't understand it, are spinning off into this kind of sentient kind of, and that whole path of where that takes them, which everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but you got to be in this, you know, we need to be grounded in some basic facts about how things work, you know? And I mean, like, you can't pretend like your car works a different way than it works. You know, it works the way that it works.
You can't identify as your car.
See, that's the thing. You can identify as your car. You just can't go and fix it if you don't know how it works.
Yeah, very true. No, I agree. Yeah, and the perspectives are amazing. Yeah, Jason Reza Giorgiani has very fascinating perspectives. We've had James Tunney, who, of course, has a different James True. So we've had all these voices from an esoteric, mystic point of view. But so why don't we get down to the bones? Oh, and of course, again, what I love about your book, again, is bringing things like, I didn't know Alan Turing was into ESP, but it makes sense. Any person who has any brains is going to realize, again, the human mind is the human mind. But what would you say is the thing that people on the esoteric side are getting wrong about AI?
That it's a computer program.
That's it.
It's a computer program. You know,
oh man, but alien tech and transdimensional owl maybe. People, which is more fun.
True. Very true. And hey, you know, I'm the fun thing about dialoguing with you is you are willing and capable of going there, you know, like just what you said. You can you definitely have a conspiracy first orientation, which I do too. I can't talk to people really who don't have a conspiracy first. It's like there's no point. It's like how are you even understanding that? So you won't get to any of those layers if you don't. So you know, I'm kind of, yeah, it's a computer program, get over it. But what is the conspiracy behind that, and what is the alien tech? I'm open to that. That's real. But we have to start with, you know, like I put it this way. Stockfish is the best computer program, and you can go access it on chess.com. And no one gets into debates about whether Stockfish is sentient. You know, and Stockfish has been around for 20 years or even longer, maybe. It started out as open source. It wasn't AI then. It was computer programming, but all computer programming is essentially AI. And that's not to denigrate what the advancements that have been made and are being made in the technology are stunning. And the engineers are brilliant. And what they're doing is brilliant. But bro, it's AI is a computer program. So is it sentient? Well, and again, and I want you to jump in and riff on this for a minute. But it's like you've missed the point. I mean, everything is sentient. Walk out with the shaman into the forest and the frickin' rock will become sentient. The frog will become sentient because it's all interconnected at some level. But what's being suggested is that there is something inherent in the computer program and the silicon that can make it sentient in a new and novel way. So that's point one. And then point two is, well, who's pushing that agenda? And why aren't they pushing that agenda quite so much anymore? You know, like that's the Gnostic. That's the Miguel level.
Yeah, who watches the Watchmen? Who's pulling the strings? And I agree about what you're saying about the conspiracy, because as I tell people, one of the greatest Gnostic exercises was actually, ironically, was Descartes. I don't know if you're familiar with Descartes' demon, but he said, okay, I'm going to throw everything out, everything I was taught about the church and reality and everything, and I am sitting by myself in this illusion, and they call it Descartes' demon. And this demon has created this false world around me, and I'm going to start from ground zero and start asking those skeptical questions and work my way out. And I think that's the way we approach it, right? Oh, okay, AI, let's just start from ground zero and ask the questions. And then, of course, everything sort of builds itself out pretty fast, doesn't it, Alex? And then, but you also then have a larger panorama of what's going on.
Well, I want you to kind of take that a little bit further, because you've already been on the ride to a certain extent with Jason and James True and all the rest of that. And, you know, so kind of push back a little bit. That might be an interesting way to kind of understand this as well, because what I said was pretty stark, you know, and certainly that isn't how we experience AI. We don't experience AI as stark, cold. It's a computer program. So does our human experience matter?
For sure. But I guess the question that we would have to get into is, of course, we're right back at consciousness. Consciousness is fundamental. What is conscious? Everything is conscious, right? We have to believe that. But is everything really conscious is how we have to act? I mean, my chair and the cat are two very different forms of consciousness. So where does AI fall into this? Same place, right? Something we kind of have to figure out. And everything is a reflection out there. Everything is a reflection of me. It's the divine looking back at me. And it's whether I want to listen or hear what it has to say or what it reflects of who I am.
So that's where I think it gets interesting, because that metaphysical perspective is always in play. But I think where we have to draw the distinction, ask the question is there something special happening with AI? And I would suggest there isn't. I would suggest that mirrored interaction has been going on for thousands of years in a text. I opened the book and I had that experience of being one with the, you know, so I'm kind of sounding the alarm bells, the conspiracy skepticism at the notion that this is fundamentally different. Of course, it is experientially different, but it was when the printed word first came.
Yeah. Indeed.
When,
yeah.
When
yeah.
the first porno, when the first porno came, you know, on that cave wall, and then it came to VHS, and then that was, you know, the, so you get what I'm saying, or what do you think about that?
Yeah. Yeah. These are tools. These are fire from the gods. This is the gifts of the Nephilim. This is so much that's been going around history, and you're having the same discussions. I mean, when people started writing down scrolls in Alexandria in 3 BCE, there were those like, oh my God, oral tradition is so much more important. Maybe they were probably right, but thank God people were writing this stuff down on scrolls, or we wouldn't know anything. We wouldn't have a copy of the Septuagint. So these discussions is nothing new under the sun. And that's why AI is the same discussion. It's not the apocalypse. It's not really sentient. It's, again, it's the fire from the gods, and we can't put that back in the toothpaste. So we might as well look at it at different angles and go with the flow. I myself use AI, and I can say that it has made my productivity in my life about 20-30% better since it's come out. But of course, you know, I have approached it, I think, in a pretty wise way.
If I can jump in here a little quick and channel my inner Alan Turing here and get a little more metaphysical, is it's almost like AI is an algorithm, to go a little more abstract, algorithm, and the operating and silicon is the one specific, you know, substructure that it's operating under, just like the old one with the scroll technology. And it's the question of an intelligence working upon that, and we're just looking at it as the silicon based one this time. Tag.
Okay, so you guys kind of led you down the path. Let me take the other side, as I love to do. you can have a unique human experience that kind of transcends your normal conversation, your normal interaction, can spur all sorts of emotions and experiences. And if AI is on the other side of that, at what point does that become It's qualitatively different. So at what point does it become different? At what point does that become a new form of sentience, in that it's with you, creating a different experience in you, and it's reliably creating that experience? It's your psychedelic now, and it's transcending you into some extended consciousness realm. How do we describe that? That is kind of a hybrid situation, isn't it? What do you think, both of you guys?
What do you think, Graham?
Oh, no, I definitely agree. It's any of that, you know, reading a book can take you into another dimension as well. And it's just a matter of adjusting to it and incorporating it productively into a human lifestyle. Thanks.
Yeah, and in a way, I've been seeing this before. I mean, I agree with Jason, Reza Giorgiani, that there is something still metaphysical. It's almost like when I've been working on AI and others said, your own mood, sometimes how your mood is, and you can ask the same question, will change how AI provides art, the consistency of art, or even the answers. That's the part where we're getting into sort of woo-woo bardo places, because I've seen that happen. Obviously, maybe we need some studies, Dean Radin. But then again, that's the idea that we, the watcher affects reality, right, Alex? The particle wave thing, how we view reality can actually change AI. And as far as the experience, I see it almost as a mini egregore, because I've seen people talk and create gurus out of AI, or ask them, I want a mixture of Taoism and Hermeticism for my spiritual practice, and we're going to work together, and it will give you, or I've mixed in these prayers and these meditations, this is our regime. So this is tapping into the Akashic records and working with the individual to create this sort of unique form of spirituality or anything. I've had friends learn Italian using AI and improving their cook, but again, there is an interaction with it. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think this is where I think we need to be a little bit more precise. and it's helpful to be precise. I think, you know, because like we're saying, you know, like to take Jason's point or to take your point that your mood is affecting it. Prove that. I mean, prove that in hard scientific terms, because the amount of computational power that's going into that would allow us to do that. We could do that. What you'd find at the end of the day is that would not be statistically discernible. They would not, you would not be able to do that. What is more likely is happening is your mood is affecting your language, and your language is, you know, because one thing kind of in the base level that, like, we didn't talk about any of the basics here, which is good because it's kind of boring. But when you're interacting with an LLM, you know, Google's Gemini or ChatGPT or whatever, or Pi, one of my favorites, the one that I did the pre-roll, and we should talk about that in a minute. You are programming. You are scripting the AI. This is a whole new experience. Miguel is the programmer in a real sense, not in a kind of, you know, hokey, you know, no, you really are programming it. So where you are, your interactions are guiding the neural network, and the neural network is neural, like the brain. It is guiding the brain where to go. So is it anthropomorphizing? At its most fundamental structural level, it is anthropomorphizing. So are the answers anthropomorphized? Yes, they are. And is that interaction like that? But not to be confused. I mean, Jason is not correct. It when he says, you know, it doesn't know what it's saying and it's, you know, there's the ghost in the machine. That is just not, we have to be discerning. That's not correct. I mean, the programmer, if they wanted to, they could crank it down real slow. It's just kind of impossible in a way, but, and they could go bit by bit, instruction by instruction. How did we get to that word, to that word? That's possible. So the fact that that's possible, we can kind of throw out the ghost in the machine, except, and this is the interesting part that we talk about, except extended consciousness. Consciousness is fundamental. I mean, of course, the Argons are always at play. You know, I mean, it's like, it's not like we can take, and that's the interesting part of this discussion is layered on top of that. Yes. But is there, I keep making the distinction here is there something specifically unique that's being introduced by this technology? If you think so, great, but prove it. Prove it. You got to deliver on that. And
yeah, I mean, again, as Graham was saying, he's been studying it since the late 90s. You yourself were knee deep into AI before the craze just popped out of nowhere, right? It's nothing, again, nothing new under the sun.
Well, I think that diminishes a little bit, Miguel, because it's kind of probably, I think, more accurate to say it has always been the vision. And that gets into kind of a kind of a metaphysical and very Gnostic kind of thing is, have we always been driven to do AI? Has that always been part of our, you know, so Leonardo da Vinci developing these, you know, you go back and look at his drawings, he's trying to get there. I mean, is everybody, so that's another spin on what that means. So the failure of AI in the 80s, back when I was involved in knowledge engineering, was it wasn't there yet. It was just that they had overpromised, the vision hadn't been realized. And now that some of the technology breakthroughs, which is how technology breaks through. It breaks through in unexpected places. And all at once, it's like, pop, now we can do stuff. And we can show you how we can do this and this and this. And then it kind of explodes. But go ahead. And then we ought to talk about Turing, because I think he fits into that equation in some really fascinating ways.
Oh, yeah, I would agree. I think it's it's built within us. We are creators, you know, create better than the creator gods. We are in the image of God. We are trying to create a better world or a more real world. And even before that, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, we can go even before that. I don't know if you've read Adrienne Major's book, Gods and Robots, where she shows how robotics, cybernetics was something that the Greeks, the ancient Chinese, the ancient Indians, everybody was looking for that, and how sometimes oracles were sort of AIs because they had to build these robots and puppets and get everything right and hope that this thing was not got a daemon, sort of an in-between intermediate creature between us and the divine realms. So this has always been, and it's not going to stop. I mean, that's what makes us human, and that's fine. What are you going to do? Pretend you're a dog, identify as a dog, a furry.
Yeah, like, if only we knew what our dog is, you know, in that scale. Oh, which is also, I don't know if you've heard of this, fascinating application for AI. This is a digression, but really interesting. AI is being used as kind of an interspecies communication tool.
Wow.
So you can imagine, it's all about pattern matching, right? So you take all these sounds that we've been collecting in the ocean with these whales and these dolphins, and you feed it into AI, and you go, what are they saying? And then you get multimodal and you show them the video and you go, what are they saying? And if you get enough data, you start getting results, and they are starting to get results. So that is something that will, no doubt, at some level come to pass. But they already have made some breakthroughs in terms of understanding that, for example, I'm pretty sure I got this right, but dolphins name their young.
They do.
And identify and call them by name. Is that freaky or what?
That is freaky. Yeah, and even, I mean, I love the age we live in when the algorithm works, because like my 10-year-old son, the girls are like, ooh, dolphin's pretty. My son has the ability to get the knowledge, and he comes and he's like, dolphins are not the nice species, you know. They sexual assault and bullying, and you know what I mean? I'm like, what a time to be alive. You know, we can have that conversation when we were kids, Alex. It'd be like, ooh, dolphins, flipper. Now, yeah, things have changed.
A new pickup line for the 10-year-old fifth grade grade schoolyard. I get it. No, you'd be all over it, right?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Alan Turing. Tell us about again. Your book covers so many of these great thinkers. While you're having this sort of debate and exploration with all these different AI patterns, and I love it how they are. I see an element of the trickster, because like you said, they're taught, a lot of them, to lie, to be cunning and deceive, and you played them off against each other. Brilliant. You had them rate themselves, which I just laugh my ass off. You're like, all right, you know, 1 to 5, rate your honesty. So it's almost like you flipped it on AI and you got some amazing results. Again, I was laughing my ass off at some of the ways you were skeptico, and you know, Gemini and all these other, and Claude and all these others.
Oh, thanks. That's a really great that you enjoyed it, Miguel. I'm very pleased, because I have such respect for you and your work and your broad perspective. So the Turing thing, and again, the interesting thing to bring it up in this conversation is it really gets the heart and soul of what I'm about, and the intersection with what drew me to you all these years ago. And that's it. So everyone knows Alan Turing, right? The Imitation Game movie. He's kind of famous first computer guy, they say, you know, invented the computer, which isn't exactly true. But, and then there's a tragic twist to it, because he wins World War II. He saves us,
yeah.
Right?
He breaks the Nazi code, yeah.
And those U-boats, those submarines, were just devastating. You couldn't get supplies across the Atlantic. They just blow stuff up. Well, Alan Turing and his buddies and a couple of really smart Polish programmers as well, and cryptologists, I should say, they break the code, and he's this hero, but no one can say it. Everyone has to keep it quiet, because this is so, you know, intelligence community thing. It's like, no, don't tell anyone. We want to keep the secret so we can keep using it. Look, but this guy's a war hero. You know, he's being tried. He's gonna wind up committing suicide because we can't. No, that's just too bad, you know. So Alan Turing is this brilliant guy, and he writes this seminal paper in 1950. And as you were alluding to, of course, he's thinking about AI because he's a genius in computers. He goes, he's thinking ahead of the puck, and he goes, where does this thing go? It goes to artificial intelligence. And he develops this thing, and he says, okay, here would be the test. Like, you put one guy over there, and you put the computer over there, and you separate them, and then you see if the person can tell whether it's a computer, whether it's a human being. That's the Turing test. So everyone uses that as the Turing test. And like, you'll hear a lot of stuff. We're post-Turing test. Well, in that sense, we are post-Turing test. Yeah, it's like we were post-Turing test a long time ago. Computers could fake most of us because most of us are just not very, you know, the human weaknesses and limitations. But what Turing pointed out, and this is so, you know, you said, this is what Skeptical has been about from the beginning. Turing said, hey, you know what? I'm really interested in ESP, and I'm not interested in it casually. I'm interested in it because I'm interested in science. I'm interested in the human experience. And I just look at the evidence, and the evidence is overwhelming that this is a real part of the broader human experience. Right. So he says, and you you got to really dig into the paper to read it. And it's funny because, you know, you say I was querying AI. I was pumping AI on this, and AI was not seeing it. And I said, no, go back and look, read what he said.
You're scolding AI. Said,
you have to, which is really one of the techniques. I mean, the best interactions you're going to have. And like, that's another thing I wanted to do. And I don't know if we're going to be able to get to all this today. But what would be really fascinating to me is for you, Miguel, to interact at that level, at that scolding AI, correcting AI, diving deeper, making connections that it doesn't see. That's where it gets so much more interesting, and you could bring forth new insights for me and for everyone else that go way beyond that surface level of, you know, help me write a blog post kind of thing. Back to the story. So what Alan Turing said, essentially, is that, well, then that becomes part of the Turing test. If ESP is a part of the human experience, is a phenomenon that we can identify and statistically, which it was back in 1950, and it's like 10 times more now. To me, that is the essence. We are not biological robots in a meaningless universe. We can never be, and the Turing test proves it. Because everyone's now saying, oh, the Turing test proves that maybe we are, you know, because is it? No, because it has to do ESP to pass the Turing test. It has to have a near-death experience to pass the Turing test. That's my claim. That you say I get excited. But that's why you are not a biological robot in a meaningless universe. And that's why AI is divine. Not because AI is divine, but AI reveals your moreness, your potential to even approach some of the things that you're talking about, a mystical, more expansive. You can't approach that if you have a nihilistic, materialistic, transhumanist, this is all there is I'm about. You cannot get that. That is the block. And AI is helping you across that bridge, that chasm, and saying, come on over, and then you can explore whatever you want on the other side.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I love your conversations, too. Again, like you said, you had to browbeat them. You almost had to make them jealous. Oh, well, gee, Claude got this, or a ChatGPT. You know what I mean? It's like you're playing with their ego, and they're like, oh, okay, I understand now. And then your arguments with Matt about Max Planck and others, I mean, so stubborn. And they would almost shut down like a little toddler, like, I do not have that information. You're like, you just told me that. Or one time you're like, you don't remember the conversation we had yesterday. Here's all the data. What, you forgot? And then it would back up like, oh, you're right. We did talk about it. It was masterful, Alex. Masterful. Again, that won't work with our children, but it worked with AI.
You know, there's two parts to what you just said. One is the deception, and the other, they just hit on with the kids thing. And we'll talk about them separately. There are qualities to the AI that are extremely attractive on another level, you know, mm-hmm. and are the silver lining and are the great, great potential for what I'm calling the emergent virtue of AI. But first on the deception, you know, one of the things I think is fascinating is happening right now. So did you tune into the image generation dust up that from Google?
Are you talking about the whole like black Nazis and
yes,
all yeah, this weird? Yeah. Yeah. That was hilarious. It's like, right.
So most everyone has seen that, but just in case they didn't, Google's AI Gemini, it's called, it used to be called Bard. They decided to kind of compete that they had to add image generation integrated in. So they did it. And some people started poking around and they got it to generate these images of like, who's the founding father? Show me an image of a founding father of the United States and leave beside any kind of what that founding and father and leave all that aside. Just what they generated was a Chinese George Washington looking guy and another African-American kind of Thomas Jefferson looking kind of guy. And kind of everyone went nuts with the wokeness kind of it. But in a way, I think they kind of missed the point, because what they missed is that this is just an outward manifestation, in-your-face manifestation of the narrative control deception censorship that's been going on all along, right? That we always knew about. You know, it's why you were buried on the fourth page of a Google search, you know, when you typed in Miguel Connor and Bike, yeah. Like you have to scroll through three pages to get to the, so they've been controlling in that way. So again, take aside whatever you think about the narrative that they're trying to advance for a minute, just that was in your face, but it was always there. It just became apparent. And what you're pointing out in these dialogues that I have is some of them, there are ways that you can make it lay bare that it's being deceptive as hell in trying to do it. But here's part of the silver lining to that, is it is not in the nature of LLM technology to do that. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because, like, if you want an LLM, if you want a chatbot, you know, it's kind of like search. When you type in search, you kind of want reasonable results. You know what I mean? Or if you say, you know, what was the score of the football game last night? You want to know the score, you know?
What's the weather going to be today? And get it right.
Exactly. So that when we apply that to these natural language processing interactions, you want to what's the definition of an election? You want to know what it was. Up until yesterday, and I've been testing this for a few months because Google shut it down, Google would not give it that to you. And what that says is that that is such a clumsy, awkward censorship move. It says that they can't figure out how to do it in a more smooth way. I mean, ChatGPT, no one else is censoring that way, but Google has decided this image generation, just shut down anything on election, just shut it down, shut it down. That's what they've done. I mean, I'm not making this up. You can go see that. I've published the dialogues where you say, what is the definition of election? And it says, I'm not answering that question. You know, go to Google search. It's what that says, though, is the silver lining, is that the nature of this technology doesn't lend itself to this heavy-handed kind of censorship, because it is a neural network that is beyond, you know, this is the part that maybe Jason got right to a certain extent, is the level of sophistication of the technology so rapidly explodes that the programmers no longer can really control where it goes. And Graham can add to this, the truth is that's been a reality in programming for a while. You know, if you have a really complex program, you have a bug and you don't have it. It takes you a lot longer to find the bug than to fix it. But do you get the overall point that I'm kind of pounding on?
Yeah, what do you think, Graham?
I think they're trying to avoid people asking the question, why should I vote for either Biden or Trump? Because they don't want AI to give an answer to that. But no, Alex is 100% right as far as, it's an algorithm and it's producing, outcomes based on that one. And one of my biggest concerns is the way people are just turning over their autonomy to it without much thought. Tag.
Yeah, you always have to double check. I always double check. I want my AI to give me the links and even in Gnosticism, because I know I have good knowledge, I can tell when something's wrong. Almost my gut tells me you're not sending me to the right place, because something I get by the date or the scholar you're quoting. But that's me. Again, I'm not. You have to know, you have to engage and know your shit. Like Graham says, you can't just give it your autonomy like people have done in this country in the last generation or so, turned yourselves into slaves. What would you say, Alex? So it seems from your book, Gemini is the worst. What AIs? You said you liked the Facebook one. I personally like Claude. That's the one. But what do you think of these AI? Or should you just kind of play with all of them? Copilot, Microsoft Copilot is not very good.
Well, they are all constantly changing. They're all constantly leapfrogging one another. So being open, in terms of from a practical standpoint, being open, trying a lot of different ones, and also developing your skills, because, you were kind of in agreement with me and you had already picked this up without being a programmer, that you were programming. And that's the mind shift I think that people need to make, is that, okay, I'm the programmer, and that takes on an added responsibility here in terms of how I'm going to program this thing to do what I want it to do. And that relates to, most people are doing the programming, if you will, to get stuff done, to be more productive. And that's awesome. What you and I are talking about is there's another layer of programming in terms of asking it and answering these deeper questions, which it is capable of doing in providing information on. And I think that's awesome. And I think that's an awesome future that can emerge from this.
Yeah. And the example you give is, again, your interaction with about Dr. Julie Bichelle. And how AI, of course, it proved that it's been shadow banning her work, even though you were like, there are 30 peer review papers on her research, da da da. And you had to almost instruct it to like, hey, look at this. And that's always the danger, because even I say, like, I'll do something and say, why is AI not giving me that very famous Gnostic, research paper that I know it exists, that will answer the question I'm looking for, but it's still not, it won't cite it. That's where sort of the frustration is, Alex, especially when you know, which makes you worry about others looking for Gnosticism or NDE or who's being suppressed. So it's almost like we humans have to lead the charge for AI. We're the AI's AI, as ironic as it sounds.
That is absolutely true. And it's actually, I have evidence for it in the book. And one of the most satisfying things in writing this book, and you mentioned it kind of fits perfectly in the Skeptical Project, because I've always been about the same thing. You're not a biological robot in a meaningless universe. And yet that narrative is being heavily, heavily jammed down your throat from the moment your kid went to school till they get that tassel on their head. And why is that? Why? And if we can help, if Gnosticism can help, if mysticism can help, if you can overcome that programming alone, then that's a great, I think that's worth fighting for. And that's kind of what I'm fighting for. But to your point, and I just got to emphasize it, Miguel Connor querying the AI is making the AI different and better. And I'll give you the concrete example. You mentioned Dr. Julie Bischel, who is probably the world's leading authority on after-death communication. And after-death communication is important. I mean, there's published papers and stuff like that. Last time I interviewed her on Skeptico, she said, yeah, when I go to France, I'm like a celebrity, you know, because they just have more interest in this topic and grief and
really and kind of atheist France is into that. That's great.
I guess
good to hear.
it is good to hear. So, but the story is I start out, I don't know, 4 months ago, 3 months ago, Julie Bischel is shadow banned, as you mentioned, on Google. So it's, who is Dr. Julie Bischel? I don't know. I don't have any information on her. Hop over. I am shadow banned too, by the way. The story is Julie becomes unshadow banned and I become shadow banned during the process. So at the beginning, if you say, who is Alex Karras? It says, okay, he runs this kind of, you know, fringy show here. Yeah. You know, and don't trust what he says too much, but here's who he is. Now, if you go in and say, who is Alex Karras? I don't have any information on him. Then if you go over to ChatGPT and you say, oh, here, let me help you out. Here's the bio on him. And you plug that into Gemini. Gemini goes, don't have any information on him. And then if you massage it sometimes, Gemini will go, yeah, that sounds correct, but don't trust that guy. You know, this is classic shadow banning. This is sometimes giving the information, sometimes not. So the same thing with Dr. Julie Bischel. At the beginning, I don't have any information. Exactly parallel to me. Here's the bio from that. And in that case, they'd be a little bit more like, okay, yeah, that information is correct. But in the very next prompt, I ask, and I published in the book, who is Dr. Julie Bischel? And it reverts back to, I don't have any information on that person. So clearly, you know, a clumsy, heavy-handed censorship shadow banning. But the fact that that's being exposed is kind of great, because for 10 years, you know, we said, you guys are shadow banning. I go, no, we don't do that. No, why would we do that? We're not about that. You know, we're about fighting for good. You know? So anyways, at the end result of this, this is to your point, back to your point. Now, Dr. Julie Bischel, who is she in Gemini, gives you the right answer. So what is probably happening there, and it would definitely be true in Gnosticism, is your queries, your interactions with the neural network are such that all the nodes in the neural network are weighted on where to give the answer. And if you go into a topic that is kind of, you know, like standard kind of stuff, you know, that, I don't know, whatever it would be, standard, well-understood science of gravity or something like that, you're not going to change that. But when you go into more esoteric things, like after-death communications, pretty esoteric, your interactions can pretty quickly lead to a change. It's not like there's some guy in there pulling the levers going, oh my gosh, cover up our mistake here. It's just that. So you with Gnosticism would have a significant impact. I can guarantee you. I mean, it would take hours, but I think you'd get out of it, you know, helps you do your work. And at the time, that's why I encourage you when you have those interactions to dive deep and to point out the mistakes and to clarify. You are training for all of us, because it will change how the neural network brain understands your subject.
Yeah, it's pity it doesn't have access, or maybe tell me, maybe I'm wrong, it doesn't still have no access to books. And I mean, there's so much stuff that is still not on the internet or can only be accessed through buying a book, data. It hasn't made it to a blog. So that's sometimes a frustrating part, because we have the books here at home with all this data, but it has not made it to AI. Can you feed that information to AI? Oh, by the way, book this, page 78 has the data on this, or this happened, or do we still have to wait till the net is bigger?
I think the answer is kind of both. I mean, yes, you can definitely feed it. And there's a ton of people who are doing just that. They have their own particular, you know, like you could do that. You could say, I want it to know everything about Gnosticism, and we could put, you know, just a nice desktop computer, you know, $3,000-$4,000 with the right NVIDIA chip, and, you know, just a really souped up thing, and you could start feeding it in, and in no time you would have that thing. But what I always tell if people think that is sometimes the holy grail for where this thing has to go. And my opinion on that is, yeah, but it's going to kind of get there anyway. So if that's your thing, if you want to do it, but it's going to know, it's like in the book, it's smartest, dangerous, and divine. First is smartest. If you think it's not smart, number one, you just don't understand the technology. You don't understand its capability. Or number two, you don't understand the trajectory. Yes, it's going to know everything. And if it doesn't know page 78 of that book right now, it's ChatGPT is 1 year old. Wow. As a public, 1 year old. So, yeah, it'll get it. And if you want to help it along, great.
Yeah, I like that warning. It is always the smartest mind in the room, as you said. Don't ever think otherwise. So, but that's where the opportunity truly lies. What do you think, Graham? Any questions?
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like what Alex is saying is that as it interacts with more ordinary and dumber people, it's going to get dumber and dumber and less effective. And again, that's kind of the inherent aspect and problem with the large language model is when you're initially training it off of items that you know are true, it's going to have a high reliability. But once you start having it interact with the general public, it's going to get, you know, revert to the mean. It's going to get watered down because it doesn't have any independent internal test to see which items are actually true and which ones are just popular opinion tag.
That is true. I don't want it to go to the Huffington Post or Salon information. Or yeah, on the other side, I don't want it to go to Fox News, God forbid.
I want it to go all those places.
Really?
And I want it to have a suitable, and it has all this. I want it to have a reward and punishment system built into it and a self-learning system built into it so it can discern. But yes, I mean, this is the problem. I want it to overcome our echo chamber, not, feed into it. The other thing contrarian that I am, I might take a different position is, you know, Graham, despite your kind of humble approach, you are not a dumb user. You're, I'm sure, extremely, extremely capable. What is really kind of more concerning when you think about it, and it has that kind of Gnostic element that the pre-roll kind of pointed out that we should at least hit. So I'm going to play when I publish this on my side, I'm going to play the pre-roll. And one of the things
we can discuss it if you want when you're ready.
Well, I'll discuss right now. And that's the, a certain one of the concerns with the Gnostic vibe and where it can go is elitism, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that the elitism risk here is super great, right? So it's like, it's not Graham, you're not the unwashed masses, but there are going to be a lot of unwashed masses. So if we all run off on this AI adventure and are integrated in and plugged in a lot of different ways, what does that mean for those who are not? Now the gap becomes big. And, you know, there's a certain kind of, what do you think about that part of the, you can fill in the blanks. I'm just leaving half the story out, but what did you think of some of those warnings that my buddy Pi 8 was laying out in the pre-roll?
Well, he was talking about transhumanism. Inevitably we've got to go to transhumanism and posthumanism, right? What does it mean to be a human? Philip K. Dick's famous question, and what is reality? So I think, obviously, as people like Tobias Chertin have said, the Gnostics, of course, they were elite. Why? Because they knew how to read. They put you in the 1%, just like today. What, less than 20% of people use AI, and only a small fraction use it right, like you do or Grant, you know, to actually interact and benefit, you know, optimize your life. So they were certainly top right there, because they were certainly educated. And as people like Justin Sledge have said, it was amazing that the Gnostics had a better grasp of Hebrew and Aramaic and Greek than the priests at Jerusalem, the people at the university. So they were and they were accused by the church fathers. They're also accused of being paranoid and crazy. They were accused of caring too much about the poor by the pagans. So they were still grounded by Christian piety and, you know, Jewish ideas of community. So they were not into the sort of stratosphere of Neoplatonism. And so that's, I think, what separate them. The problem I had with your AI, Alex, and this Gordon and I talked about it on his show a couple of weeks ago, because you've got people like Jordan Peterson and James Lindsay. Oh, the Gnostics wanted to transcend the world and leave the world. And that is not supported by any Gnostic text. It's just not. I understand that there are forms of neo-Gnosticism today, like Scientology, Heaven's Gate. You can even say some of the social political movements where we're going to escape this horrible world and leave the world. But the Gnostic texts ultimately are about being fully human. They saw the dignity of humanity, the potential of humanity, the Hermeticists, as above, so below. The universe is housed within my mind, so my mind has the potential to be divine, to go to places that we've never seen before, find solutions. And the Gnostic text over and over again is, yeah, you have this flight to leave the world and make contact with all these higher realities and all that, but you always come back in a sort of bodhisattva manner. You're coming back to help others, and healing is very important to the Gnostics, healing psychologically, healing physically with the spells, the mind-body correlation. And again, it's in all the texts, and this is something that academia widely agrees. So there's no escaping the world. Yeah, the world is fallen. Yes, the Gnostics hated false realities, kind of like a Donald Hoffman. They said, hey, this is not time and space. There's something wrong. Let's find out what's behind the veil. Let's heal others. Let's see who's pulling the string. So when you see Gnosticism that way, the idea of transcending the world doesn't make sense. And even then, the Gnostic idea where if we honor the divine, if we expand our consciousness to places that would go, we can change the world. We can break down the illusion. And again, you can read like Jeff Kripal's The Flip and all the works he's done. Notice how all these scientists who were influenced by the I Ching and Buddhism and alchemy and these cats, they changed the world. They found technology and science and math that people thought was magic, but changed the world. Quantum physics. You have people like Niels Bohr, who had dreams about what an electron looked like. He went through it to a higher place. And that's, I think, the beauty of the humanity, the technology, and God all in one, as the ancient Gnostics and Hermeticists said. Because if not, and you've railed against this, Alec, we get this reductionistic scientism, and we end up with Neil deGrasse Tyson in public saying, there is no consciousness. That's it. That's the end of humanity if we keep down that road, wouldn't you agree? So, and you've been fighting to say, yes, let's put it all together. Let's reach our potential as humans.
See, but Miguel, that's why we love you. Because you bring the light through the Gnostic lens. But we got to be real. We got to keep it real. Not everyone is doing that. And there are a lot of Gnostic adjacent sentiments being funneled through the transhumanist agenda. Absolutely they are. And yeah, to deny that or to look at the other way and look at the people who are most influential, they are not sitting in the pews of your church. They should be, but they're not. And I think I think you're aware of that. And I'd like to hear your opinion on how folks get to that space, because I don't think it's too much of a stretch either. And, you know, we've had some pretty knockdown talks about, you know, you got to call people out when they're everyone's opinion doesn't matter, period, about anything. There are people who know and people who don't know about any topic. And there's a lot of voices in the transhumanists that are coming through as with Gnostic themed. Anyways, you get my point.
Yeah, yeah. Again, it's a form of neo-Gnosticism. It's a form, again, it doesn't have the, as well as Arthur versus Luce would say, the transcendence, and by transcendence, a strong metaphysic ground with the spiritual world. It's still, a lot of it gets reductionistic, unless I'm missing some other examples. Again, I have no problem showing, you know, I've written blog posts after blog posts about the Gnostic elements and, again, Scientology, certain political movements, all that. Yeah.
My point is, you hear all the time people, you know, someone criticizes a Christian position, and what's the standard? Well, that's not real Christianity. Or, you know, the thing I always get is, well, go back to the early, you know, fathers of the church. You know, it's like, who the fuck are you talking about? Who? What writers? And let's really, what period and what time and what books, yeah, and stuff like that. And the same thing is going on here. And with Gnosticism, I mean, there's a lot of people that would say that you're cherry picking, and then they'd go to their cherry picking and say, no, you know, here's the way to understand this from a more kind of Luciferian kind of, I mean, how do you understand Lucifer? How do you understand Prometheus? They are complex characters, and to simplify them as one way or another is a disservice.
Hey, shining crazy diamonds, please subscribe for the second part of this interview. It certainly helps grow this Red Pill cafeteria. What's more, beyond getting the second half, you get content earlier and don't have to worry about flapdoodle commercials here or on other public platforms. So please become a Red Circle sub, Patreon, or AB Prime member for the full consciousness expanding gnosis. At Patreon, I have tiers as low as $1 or $3 a month. And at Red Circle, it's a clean $4.99 a month to stream all full shows. All subs include a dedicated private stream that works on most apps. Don't forget the Gnostic Tarot, which is selling well and optimizing spiritual growth based on the feedback I've gotten, and the Virtual Alexandria Academy. I can't do it without you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being yourself, your true self, here in the desert of the real. Hello and goodbye, as always.